At page 10, line 27, this standardizes language to prevent administrative costs associated with paying small monthly benefits on the death of a member. And I, to be honest with you, I don't recall what the testimony from the former director was on this one. And if you, if you're concerned about that, we might ask Mr. What?
Well, my question, of course, is the obvious question. If the amount is under $30, how is it paid?
Now, Mr. Chairman, it would be paid in a lump sum, sir, rather than taking it as an annuity payment.
All right.
Okay.
Everybody. No problem with that.
Same thing over on page 11 is just consistent with that one.
Consistency.
Mm-hmm.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, on page 11, lines 41, we have been, as staff, have been struggling with one word in there, and perhaps I can ask for some assistance. So long as the monthly payments plus the monthly payable that we just talked about over here in on line 27 and 28 of page 11, and I think it's meaning one or the other is what the intent is, that neither one, if it's under 30, then it would be paid as a lump sum. If the plus does that, we're okay, but we're reading it that one could be plus and the other one would be less than.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, if I understand, if we take, I'd move to take out the word plus and put in the word or.
Is that what you want?
Well, we'll
have to
take it.
Does that do it?
I thought that's...
I think if I may, Mr. Chairman, I believe that if we would take the word payable and change that to the word elected, then it would do what we need it to do in there. If I may, just a little background. When this is for a death benefit for what we call an active member, or which you and I are. In that case, whatever is in our account balance in the form of a benefit is matched by a like amount of money from the employer's funds.
Mm-hmm.
And a designated beneficiary may elect to take the whole thing in a lump sum.
I gotcha.
May elect to take all of it as an annuity payment, or may elect to take the member's money as a monthly annuity and the employer's money as one total benefit. What this is trying to say is, as long as those benefits are less than $30 under the member's account, then we'll pay it as a lump sum. They do not have the annuity. It simplifies the administration for small benefits where we have a whole lot of people. Over here, and for the employer money under 237-169, beginning line 41 on page 11, we're saying so long as the monthly payment under that plus the monthly amount, if elected, under the other one, the total amount is less than $30.
You want two words then in place of payable, if elected?
That's what we're suggesting, if I may.
Mr. Downey moves the deletion of the word payable on line 41, page 11, and the addition of the words if elected. I will decline to serve. Okay, we're on...
hope we're getting into campaign reform.
No. We're on line 13, or page 13, line 17.
Did you take that amendment?
Yes.
Oh, excuse me. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so amended. Go ahead.
All right. Page 13, line 17, within 6 days after the day of the first benefit payment is, again, consistency with what we've already talked about.
Okay.
Keep it going.
We've knocked out a whole subsection or a whole mess on page 14. What's that?
14. That's another obsolete provision.
There is another line of
this has to
survivorship here under another statute, is that what you're saying?
That's correct. This has to do, and the beneficiary...
Lieutenant Walden, do you know anything about that?
What's that?
Well, this has to do with the line of survivorship. Apparently, it's obsolete.
Talking about 59 to 61.
We're talking about, we're talking about page 14, lines 11 through 22.
Right. We're talking about 1959 to 1961.
Have we changed the survivorship in statute since then? Mm-hmm. That is state survivorship laws? Mm-hmm. Statutory laws?
Chairman, Mr. Andrews, can you answer that question?
You know,
the best that I can answer you on this one, sir, if I may, is that what it would do is we would then treat the individual as not retired, and it would default to what we call an in-service death, and then they would have benefits under 237.169. So we see, from the staff's position, we see no problem with the deletion of that. It would not impugn anybody.
It doesn't seem to, I mean, the cutoff here is 1961. It doesn't mean anything there on line 20.
Right.
The beneficiary of the retired member after August 5th, 1959 and prior to February 24th, 1961 died. That's already been taken care of. Yeah.
It's excess baggage, if I may, sir.
Yeah. Okay. No problem. Go ahead. Why it was ever there in the first place, I don't know.
Okay. Line 21 on page 16 of, is back
That's
to
the same thing.
Same thing. Line page 17, line 37.
Oh, page 16, line 32 deals with by at least 2% thereof. And according to, we're now in the computer age, and they say that we don't need that anymore.
That's correct.
That's right.
Yes.
Okay. Now we're where, did you say, 17, line
37? 17, line 37 through 44.
Okay.
This was, as you may recall, the former director testified this was to bring state and local employers in the collection of past due contributions into some sort of standard and amends the way in which a delinquent report penalty is computed. This says $2,000 or 1% of the total annual contributions for each month, a fraction thereof, during which the employer is delinquent. That's the lesser of $2,000 or the 1% that could have been billed at one time.
What is the current practice on this, Bob?
The current practice, if I may, Mr. Chairman, is that we would actually go with a 1% or fraction thereof for each 30-day period. And that can become substantial for a large employer. So there is a need, there's a need for a penalty, but we can get into five digits real quick. And that's for each fraction of a 30-day period.
Well, I assume we have to have penalties in order to make them shape up if they don't pay, but we don't want to pay a penalty that's so large that they can't pay the penalty if they couldn't pay the original amount.
And that's, again, why it was being suggested that we put a cap of the $2,000 on there. If it is less than that, then it would be less than the $2,000.
All right.
But that would cap it, sir.
I understand.
What kind of a cap do you have currently?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Domney, none.
You can charge him $5,000. That's the penalty.
That's correct.
50.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
line 32. Max, what do we have there? Changing the word, in the use of the word beneficiary and changing it to surviving spouse or dependent, I guess that's the same thing.
It clarifies that this, I guess there's been some concern about what that meant. What it does is clarify that the spouse or the dependent of a deceased retiree is eligible to continue group health insurance after the retiree's death.
Well, I'm certainly in favor of that.
Well, whatever. And that same change is taking place at the top of page 19 on line 4.
Okay.
And that same change is taking place on
line
9, page 20.
Surviving spouse or dependent. Okay, so we nail that down.
Yeah.
As to who is eligible for the...
Continue to help the group health insurance.
All right.
And that's all of the changes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd move 2049 as amended.
Well, we have somebody, let's just a moment before we do that. We have some people signed up on this bill, and I...
No,
that's 2842. What am I talking about?
I don't know.
Nobody. Representative Dominic.
There is one gentleman here that wants to address something. I don't know what it is.
Chairman, there was no sign-up for 2049. But
well, it's because we've already had public hearing on 2049.
I'm not aware of it. I'm a volunteer firefighter. I'd like to make comment on the deletion of the amendment.
Well, come on up.
On page 3.
Right.
My name is Norb Berry. I'm a volunteer firefighter, state of Oregon. I'm surprised I'm only the only one of 8,000 here to be concerned about that being amended out of the bill. I think it needs to be in there that to amend it back to where it was means it's the same as taking it completely out, because the system will not allow a volunteer to be a part of the system the way it's presently structured. And the language that your prior director had put in the bill would have allowed the individual departments to select into the PERS system for the purposes of the Year of the Service Award. I personally believe it was not an end-all solution, but it was certainly a start. The volunteers certainly deserved something.
And, so what you're saying is that the length of service award is some kind of a way of figuring out the number of years that you had served had you been a fully employed firefighter by using volunteer time?
Yes, the basis of the what we're looking at across the state would be that someone would receive a fixed monthly benefit for each year of service that he would provide to a department. And if you tried to interact that with the rest of the system, it became very cumbersome and very hard to administer. For instance, you could be a volunteer for 25 years at a very low wage base and suddenly get a job at some other higher wage scale and suddenly have a large benefit because you had a lot of years of service but very little contribution. That was one of the problems.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dominey.
I guess I'm just a little confused on the whole issue about volunteers and how they could even qualify and how they would even pay their amount, who would pay the matching amount, how you could even start defining that. I mean, some rural fire departments that have volunteers maybe only meet only when there's a fire, and they may not have a fire except for once every 6 months or 3 months. I mean, what do you do in those cases? How are you able to count that time? I just have some concerns about if they're going to qualify in any form, how do we do that? Who pays their premiums? Do you have any answers to that? Does anyone?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Dominey, the sponsoring fire department would pay just like they would pay for their paid employees. Volunteers are covered now under workman's comp, under an assumed wage, so that we have some protection. And this would, I presume, work the same way. My point, Mr. Chairman, is that if you take the law back to where it was, it's the same as taking it completely out. I'd like to see it left in there and allow us, the fire service, to work with the PERS administration to get a bill, get a plan that would be workable.
Well, the problem is that, first of all, let me ask you this. Do you know if there's any volunteer firefighters that have applied to become members of the system that were allowed to do so?
There have been none allowed. There was an attempt made by one district earlier this year, and when they made an attempt to work into the system, they became aware of the problems that would have created.
So what this allows, then, if we've already done, we've already done, deleted that section by amendment. Of course, what's done can be undone until we vote on the bill. The situation here is that you would have to apply to the PERS board?
Yes.
And then who would figure out what your length of service award is?
As I understand, what your former administrator was going to do is set up a separate system that would be administered statewide, a single plan, and each district fire service would determine the amount of benefit they wanted to provide based upon a formula. And that money would be paid into the PERS, it would be administered, and the retirement would be paid out. But it would not interact at all with the rest of the system.
Well, it's not a very small item. We don't have a fiscal impact on this thing, do we?
No. It has a subsequent growth, ways and means.
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest the state of Washington administers their volunteer retirement plan with two employees. And they have many millions of dollars in it.
And they have a volunteer program in the state of Washington?
Yes. It's partially.
We don't have anything on this at all. I mean, I don't know why the bill, as printed originally, doesn't, at least I don't have anything in my folder that deals with this. Now, what was the amendment that we deleted this section with?
It was -3. It says on page 3 in lines 31 through 38, restore the bracket material and delete the boldface material.
This came from the division, wasn't it? Wasn't this from PERS?
The former director asked me to draft it, yes.
Anybody else want to testify on what we're talking about now that has can help the committee in any way, shape, or form? We'd appreciate it if we could get some input from someone that speak now or forever hold your peace. We do something you don't like, it's your fault if you don't get up here and say something. I don't see any hands raised.
I'd be happy to come back another time with at another hearing. We'll be better prepared.
We're not going to have any.
No more hearings.
We are instructed by the chairman of the committee to close the subcommittee. And, we've had 3 or 4 hearings so far, and we've had a hearing on this bill previously, and we haven't had anybody come before us other than you to give us your idea. I have an idea that maybe that the reason there's no fiscal impact, if any member of the committee disagrees, is probably because the board doesn't have to give you the okay if you apply.
That would seem to be the next step.
No.
Yes. And I think they're using the legislative intent here to say no before they have to say no.
You mean they get tired of having volunteer firefighters appear before them to?
No, it's never happened, sir. One time I'm aware of it, one department.
Yeah, if we do change it back to the way that the bill is originally printed, then there would be.
Yes. Yes, sir, there would. There'd be a number of departments. Let me state it a different way, sir. The intent of Mrs. Weigert, I believe, right, with her name? Mm-hmm. It was her attempt to sit down with fire service statewide and develop a single plan that would work. Not having fire departments coming in one after another and saying, I want to be in the system. She would develop a simple, single plan.
Well, why can't we do that?
I don't know why we can't. One of the real problems we have...
Go ahead.
One of the real problems we have with this, as it is, sir, is that many, many small departments will not be able to afford to be in the plan even after it's in. And much of the fire service wants state funding, but that's not a reality. But this is certainly something that would make it easy to administer and safe, and the volunteer would know that his money was going to be there.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Domine.
I guess one question that I have is, because this is a housekeeping bill, and what we're talking about here is substantive change, why wasn't that addressed? Why wasn't that addressed in a separate piece of legislation?
I have no answer.
You have no answer?
This is
no. Just a moment. Oh, a letter from the Department of Justice, Representative Hanlon.
That's one of the reasons.
Uh-oh. We have an Attorney General's opinion here that says that ORS 478-355 which isn't in our relating clause at all, does not provide rural fire protection districts with the authority to use tax monies to fund qualified retired and retirement accounts for volunteer firefighters.
Mr. Chairman, I've read that opinion many times myself. I have a copy of it. In fact, I'm working with the fire district that requested it. Basically says it cannot provide tax money for a qualified plan, which PERS is. They would be eligible for non-qualified plans, which would be commercial plans which are being marketed. However, I understand on the Senate side, and I believe it's in Bill 1174 or similar, there's language to correct that for the fire districts. City fire departments would not be prevented at this time on that opinion.
Well, I don't think this committee is prepared at this time to act on. To do this type of thing in light of the previous director's wishes and the Attorney General's opinion, which we have here. My suggestion is one of two things can happen. Either you can gather some forces and do something on the Senate side when this bill goes over to the Senate and has a hearing in the Senate Labor Committee and deal with Senator Kearns, who's the chairman of that committee, or we can include this on a list of interim topics when we deal with PERS in the interim max.
It can be done.
We can do either one of those or both. Should you not be successful on the Senate side in dealing with Senator Kearns, who's a reasonable man?
I've heard that.
Being reasonable. And either that or you could request from the Joint Interim Labor Committee on Labor to have a hearing on, when they hear PERS issues, on this very issue to see if we can resolve that. Okay?
I can get back to members of the Fire Chiefs Association who were very much in favor of this and see why they weren't here today.
Senator Kearns appreciated it.
Okay. To muddy the water further, I've got some minor amendments to the amendment that still some redundancies the way the amendment was written. It still says we end up being in the system, so I can leave these over here if that will help you.
You want to look at them, or?
Thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks for coming.
Mr. Chair, I am ready to move House Bill 2049 as amended.
Is there a claim for services?
All right. Representative Domine has moved House Bill 2049 as amended to the Labor Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion on House Bill 2049 and the amendments? Hearing none, Shannon, will you call the roll, please?
Aye.
by House Bill 2049 has been moved to the Labor Committee with a due pass recommendation. House Bill, we are now in work session on House Bill 2569, which is the good little old bill that we had dealing with firefighters and disabled work which qualified. I think that's what this bill did to us after the last time we heard it. We don't have anything on that.
You have an amendment in front of you that I just handed you.
I know I have that, but we don't have any. There's no.
We're just
going to have work session. All right.
If you recall, the last.
I will recall. I can tell you the section even.
The amendment wipes it out. It's
starts on line 39 of page 2. No.
43.
43, yeah. All right. So we're dealing with at the top, on page 2, delete lines 43 and 44. On page 3, delete lines 1 through 8, which deals with, as I remember, I put red pen around some words that made it almost impossible for the board to deal with this section because they had to figure out otherwise qualified and subterfuge and something else in here. But at any rate, that's gone. Good riddance. What else do we have in the amendment?
Then line 24. On page 3, after the word employed, you're to insert employed as other than a police officer or firefighter.
Okay, so it reads, notwithstanding any provision, other provision of, et cetera, but subject to the provisions of this subsection, a member retired because of disability as a police officer.
Firefighter.
Officer or firefighter under ORS 2371-1, receiving disability benefits under ORS, etc., may be employed as other than a police officer or firefighter by an employer participating in the system or any other employer. Okay?
That's correct. And then in line 28, after the period, the language is service credit earned in the system upon employment as provided in this subsection shall not include any service credit used in the computation of the disability benefit, nor be used to recompute the disability benefit the retired police officer or firefighter is receiving.
Which says that only police officer or firefighter time is to be used in determining this particular disability benefit, not any previous PERS time under another. In another position, is that what it does?
That's how I understand it. Meaning, Mr. Andrews.
Okay, let's ask Bob again. Where were you last session?
Huh? Mr. Chairman, Bob Andrews, representing PERS.
Where were you last session?
I was at my desk, sir.
was a disservice to the PERS committee. We're glad you're here. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. What we're looking for here is to decouple the computation of benefits as a disabled police and firefighter with any subsequent service that might be performed as other than a police officer or firefighter, it would be covered as
subsequent. Not prior, sir. So, in other words, all right, go ahead.
This service credit earned in the system upon employment as provided in this subsection. And this subsection has to do with being reemployed as other than a police officer or firefighter when you're already receiving the disability.
Add the disability by subsequent.
That would be correct. But it has nothing to do with
employment as a public employee.
Subsequent to the disability.
All right. Is that it? Thanks, Bob.
Go ahead, Max.
All right, then in line 38, delete 4 and insert 3. That's just a change. Line 38. Oh, okay. It's a referencing that we already took that 4 out. At one time, you'll know on lines 29 through 35, at one time the... in fact, I think Mr. Andrews or Mr. McDonald was concerned about the disability benefits and the amount of monthly disability benefits shall be reduced by the amount. And they at one time talked about changing that to annual to make it easier. But as I understand it, they have since then decided that they can deal with that section on a monthly basis.
I remember that very well.
And do not need to have it changed.
Previous comments pertaining to annual adjustments no longer apply. PERS is formalizing provisions to monitor wages paid when drawing a disability benefit on a monthly basis. Thus, there is no need to amend language in Section 2, Page 3, lines 29 through 35. Complications arise.